The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking level, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Well, Happy New Year, everyone. It's 2022. I saw that last week. Not an original thought, but it has stuck in my mind. It's spelled out, you know, and we're in numbers 2022. But when you pronounce it, it's 2022. Like 2000, like again. Got it? Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to depress you from the get-go, but we need to enter the new year with a touch of reality and realize, as our friend Lauren Mayer tells us, that we are in a bit of a time warp. So, with that in mind, everybody sing. You ready? Time for a sing-along. To start the year, come on, we can do it. Let's do it. Oh, no.
It's confounding. Time's repeating. This madness takes its toll. Anti-science nutjobs are actively spreading. A pandemic we could have controlled.
Hoping for vaccines, thinking we'd be saved then. But with vax hesitation leading to virus mutation, we're stuck in a time warp again. Shucks, it's a time warp again.
We follow facts on the left.
Uh-huh.
But nothing else on the right.
Oh, no.
We go for horse paste and bleach.
Yeah.
We put our masks on tight.
We do.
And it's the anti-vaxxers that really drive you insane. Stuck in a time warp again. Shots caused a time warp again.
It's surprising. Science would be polarizing. So cases are rising exponentially. Fox News screws the nation, spreading misinformation while they get their vaccinations. Such hypocrisy. We could have been done now.
We could have.
And it sure isn't fun now.
No, it isn't.
Everyone now is feeling the strain.
You think?
With new cases aplenty, like back in 2020.
Stuck in a time warp again. It sucks in a time warp again.
Yeah, it does.
We follow facts on the left.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing else on the right.
They go for horse paste and bleach.
We put our masks on tight, but it's the anti-vaxxers that really drive you insane. Stuck in a time warp again. Shots caused a time warp again.
Aha, Lauren Mayer. Time warp, it says the time warp 2021, but I guess it's now the time warp 2022. All right. Lauren Mayer, find her on the Twitters and the Facebooks and the YouTubes. That's where you can get all her videos. And I thought that would be a good way to kick things off because we are in this weird time warp, aren't we? I got to tell you, I got sucked into it big time today. You know, I was looking up an old friend of mine. We were like inseparable in high school, like in ninth and 10th grades. This girl, Robin, who I haven't spoken to in probably 35 years. And I found her online. She's very successful. She owns like a racehorse that's now a stud horse. And she's a financial advisor. She's the polar opposite of me when it comes to, you know, career. And so I found her on, I found her business website. She and her husband are financial advisors. And there was a contact us page, but no place to write a note, but to leave your name and phone number and email address. So I did. And sure enough, she called. So we spent about an hour on the phone. Again, somebody that I haven't spoken to since we were like probably 17 years old. So yeah, talk about a time warp. Wow. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see each other one of these days. Again, we were like inseparable for a few years back in high school. And sometimes I think, oh, it was so much easier then. But I can't imagine having to go through school with the shit that the kids today have to deal with between the threats of violence, the active shooter drills. You know, we had fire drills when I was in school, but I was after, you know, the get under your desk nuclear drills, right? I came after that. I was too young for that. And before the active shooter drills. So I guess I was in at the right time. But, and now here in Florida, I told you the other day, was it yesterday? What, today's Monday, right? I'm all confused. The other day I signed up, maybe it was Friday of last week. The days run together for me now. I spent some time watching the live stream of a Broward County, Florida school board meeting. What they wanted to do, because again, we live here in Florida, where the governor has made these certain pronouncements, one of which is that the schools can't have a mask mandate, can't have any mandates, but, you know, certainly not masks. God forbid you have to wear a mask. And so we, so the Broward County School Board had a hearing to decide what to do about the mask policy. And what they wanted to do, and I think this is what they wound up doing in Miami-Dade County. I don't know what the outcome was in Broward because I couldn't take it anymore and I turned it off. But in Miami-Dade, adults have to wear masks. Like the teachers and the staffers and, you know, everybody else who works on school property, but not the kids. How? In what world does that make sense? I mean, really, in what world does that make sense? I can't figure one. But again, I'm talking to you from Florida. And we have, well, you know about our governor, moron death sentence, who was missing for the last 2 weeks. And, you know, many of us believe that he got the COVID and thought perhaps he's on a ventilator somewhere. That would be too much fun. He showed up today at a press conference in Fort Lauderdale. And this is after... So last, I told you all this on Friday, right? That he was missing, like for 2 weeks, he hadn't been seen in public. His spokesperson allegedly said that he was on vacation. And then when, you know, we started calling him out, like the worst pandemic, we're having the biggest surge in Florida so far, and he disappears. Who is he, Ted Cruz now? Off to Cancun? And that's when we were, you know, remembered his wife has breast cancer. She was diagnosed a couple of months ago. And now they changed their tune and they're saying, well, he went with his wife to breast cancer treatments. Well, okay, that's one day. It's actually a few hours. That doesn't account for the other week and 6 days that he was missing. But, you know, they sent out pictures from the fall. They've sent out pictures that were not from these last 2 weeks. So he was missing. Regardless, he shows up today in Fort Lauderdale at a press conference talking about we're doing too much testing. I could not make this up. Do you remember when Trump used to say that? The numbers are rising, but it's because we're doing all this testing. And if you test, you can have more cases. So the less testing, we'll have less cases. Because he's a rocket scientist, you know. Of course, he came up with three vaccines in a matter of months, don't you know? All him. Nobody else did. It was all him. So now he brings aboard this guy to be his attorney general. His name is Latipo, Dr. Latipo. And I'm not going to play you the entire clip of Dr. Latipo on what he said today. I'm not even going to play you any of DeSantis just because my stomach can't handle it. So I'll play you a few seconds of this Florida Surgeon General Latipo and listen to what he's saying about testing. Now, when you listen, understand that there's nothing credible about this man at all. First of all, I don't think he's yet been confirmed by the Florida Senate. Surgeon General. But I don't think he's been confirmed yet by the Senate. Surgeon General, Attorney General, they're all interchangeable when it comes to Florida because nobody's got any credentials anyway. Sorry, I said Attorney General, I meant Surgeon General. This is what this lapdog, Latipo, had to say, speaking to the press today. And again, this is my disclaimer. Do not take to heart anything he says here because he's full of... wrong button. Oh, man, did I not... I got the wrong bang pushed here. He is full of
bullshit.
Thank you. All right. So take it away. Not yet confirmed Florida Surgeon General.
We're going to be working to unwind the sort of testing psychology that our federal leadership has managed to, unfortunately, get most of the country in over the last 2 years.
What?
We need to unwind this testing planning and living one's life around testing.
What?
Without it, we're going to be sort of stuck in the same cycle. So, you know, it's really time for people to be living, to, you know, to make the decisions they want regarding vaccination, to enjoy the fact that many people have natural immunity.
No, many people don't have natural immunity. This man, you might think, well, he's a medical doctor, the governor of Florida thought enough of him to name him Surgeon General, right? Well, I'm going to go back a few months. And again, Latipo, I do not believe, has yet been confirmed by the Florida Senate. Not that he won't be, because the Republicans dominate it and their heads are all up their collective asses, but you get the idea. But here's a story from November 10th. It's actually from the MSNBC website. But it is about this wannabe Surgeon General, the guy who Governor Death Sentence named as his new Surgeon General. And it just happened the end of October, beginning of November, right? So MSNBC has a story on their website from that time period by a woman named Kay Guerrero, who writes, several former colleagues of Dr. Joseph Latipo, Florida's new Surgeon General, say he misled the public about his experience treating COVID-19 patients. Four former colleagues worked with him at UCLA, where for several years he was an associate professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine and Health Services Research before Florida Governor Death Sentence tapped him to come here to kill the people of Florida. It says Dr. Latipo's characterization of his work is contradicted by the sources who worked at the same UCLA flagship hospital. They spoke on condition of anonymity because they're not authorized to speak on the record, but their credentials were independently verified. These sources, all of whom had experience treating COVID-19 patients, say that Latipo's numerous op-eds greatly mischaracterized the type of work he was doing during the pandemic. In addition, they don't believe Latipo treated COVID-19 patients at UCLA until after July 2020 or even later. But he wrote these op-eds, one of which appeared in the Wall Street Journal and another one somewhere else, claiming that he did that and that his stance on treating COVID patients came from the time that he did this early on in the pandemic at UCLA. Well, MSNBC got a statement from these doctors. Here's one. I was part of the team that was taking care of COVID-19 patients in the beginning of the pandemic, and Dr. Latipo was not part of that team. There were two separate groups, general medicine and ICU, plus a volunteer program to take care of COVID-19 patients. Latipo was not part of either. It was a small group of people, a task force. Everyone knew everyone. He was not there. In addition to that statement, MSNBC obtained scheduling documents from the time that Dr. Latipo was supposedly working at UCLA. They showed the schedules for dozens of doctors who were also working in the internal medicine unit alongside him. The documents span from June 2019 to September 2021. While these documents showed that numerous doctors were assigned to work in the COVID unit, at no point was Latipo scheduled to treat COVID-19 patients. He was not assigned to COVID hospital shifts. He was not part of the task force. So unless he saw patients privately, I don't think he cared for patients with the virus here at UCLA. But that's what he was hired by death sentence because of. And then it goes better. MSNBC contacted UCLA seeking comments on this reporting after multiple attempts via email and phone. They only confirmed that Latipo worked for them during the pandemic. And then they said they don't have any additional information to share. And then in July 2020, you might even remember this. Listen to this. A group of doctors wearing white embroidered lab coats stood on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court in Washington. They called themselves America's Frontline Doctors, a name that suggests they were either working in hospital emergency rooms or had experience treating COVID-19 patients. During the press conference, the doctors downplayed the risks associated with the virus and pushed, come on, say it with me, hydroxychloroquine as a cure, a statement that directly contradicts medical findings about the efficacy of the drug against COVID. And Stella Emanuel, one of the doctors at the press conference that day, said, I put them on hydroxychloroquine, I put them on zinc, I put them on Zitromax, and they're all well. Latipo was standing right behind her. The sources consulted by MSNBC said that his participation in that press conference ignited deep conversations inside UCLA about the credibility of his work and how his actions were affecting the reputation of the academic institution. They were talking about him being a source of embarrassment, especially the op-ed pieces he wrote for the Wall Street Journal. According to one of the sources, UCLA asked the Wall Street Journal to add a disclaimer next to his piece or pieces that what he wrote, clarifying that his views were his own, but to no avail. When contacted by MSNBC, the paper said, quote, the op-eds were published under Dr. Latipo's byline because they are his views. Here's another quote from one of the UCLA sources. Quote, a lot of people here at UCLA are glad that he is gone because we were embarrassed by his opinions and behavior. At the same time, we don't wish this on the people of Florida. They don't deserve to have someone like him making their health decisions. And this is the idiot who stood next to General Governor Death Sentence today. May as well call him General. That's what he wants to be. Selling, you know, snake oil. It is astounding. Now, there's something that you may not recall, but I will remind you. This is the same not yet confirmed Florida Surgeon General who went to, because he hasn't yet been confirmed, he's meeting with all the Florida state senators and he goes into the office of one of them. What?
Dr. Stella is Dr. Demon Sperm.
Oh, that's Dr. Demon Sperm. Oh, that's the, okay, that was that wonderful, brilliant doctor. Thank you. Dr. Demon Sperm. Of course it was. So anyway, I digress. So he in late October, Latipo is meeting with different Florida state senators because he needs their confirmation votes. And one such senator, when he showed up without a mask, said he can't come in here without a mask. He refused. Okay. And then I thought I had an article here with all this information. Not only did he refuse, he berated her. He made fun of her for demanding that he wear a mask. Remember, global pandemic. And this state senator, whose name escapes me at the moment, I'm sorry, had just been diagnosed with breast cancer and was undergoing chemotherapy. But I guess that doesn't matter to them because Governor Ron Moron death sentence brought his wife, you know, the one undergoing chemo for breast cancer, to some event the other night. No one's wearing masks because they don't agree with masks. This man twists every word said. I mean, I had one article I was reading about that he took a quote out of context where one of the Dr. Lena Wen, who's one of the TV doctors who shows up everywhere, who's actually a very, very highly respected doctor. And she was basically saying, if you're not wearing an N95 mask or a KN95 mask, if all you're wearing is a cloth mask, you may as well not wear a mask at all. Because you need the virus particles are so tiny that you need these masks that are professional strength, the KN95s and the N95s. A cloth mask, the particles can get through it. What she was saying is if you want to wear a pretty cloth mask, put it over the medical grade mask. Wearing a cloth mask alone won't be enough. Well, Governor death sentence idiot that he is said, quoted her, but misquoted her and said, she even said the masks are worthless. No, she said, if you're wearing a cloth mask, that alone, that's not good enough. That's what she said. I'm so over these fucking people twisting the words and making up their own science. As far as I can tell, Moron death sentence didn't graduate from medical school. And as for Dr. Latipo, I have no fucking idea. I have no idea. I don't know. But the CDC, or, well, the FDA, the CDC, Dr. Fauci did a bit of an about face. He was asked over the weekend about, you know, there's these new guidelines that I think the CDC is putting out, and then the FDA has to approve them, where they cut the isolation time in half if you've been exposed or even tested positive but are asymptomatic. And they said, make it 5 days, not 10, and don't worry about a test. Even if you tested positive, if you've isolated for 5 days and have no symptoms, you need to mask, but you can go out. And there's been some pushback asking, who are they listening to, the scientists or the big business concerns? And here's Fauci clarifying his stance here.
There's no doubt that you do want to get people out into the workplace if they are without symptoms. And in the second half of a 10-day period, which would normally be a 10-day isolation period, the likelihood of transmissibility is considerably lower in that second half of a 10-day period. And for that reason, the CDC made the judgment that it would be relatively low risk to get people out. You're right. People are getting concerned about why not test people at that time.
Yeah, I would.
I myself feel that that's a reasonable thing to do. I believe that the CDC soon will be coming out with more clarification of that, since it obviously has generated a number of questions about at that 5-day period, should you or should you not be testing people?
So you're saying yes, they should.
Clarification of that coming very soon. Well, I'm not saying yes, they should. I'm saying it's something that absolutely should be considered. And I believe the CDC is going to clarify that.
And David just came in to correct me yet again. He said DeSantis isn't twisting things. He's lying. Well, that's what he does. He is a liar. Liar. Lie, lie, lie. Lie, 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 lie. Liar. And so I'm just, you know, I actually pulled up this press conference on YouTube thinking I should watch some of it. Really, you can't. But what gets me is the idiots who you know, go on these sites and defend him. Like, the Dems keep looking for ways to bring Ron DeSantis down, and they keep failing because he is by far the best governor in the country. To which I say,
bullshit.
And further I say,
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up.
Couldn't start the year without this, right? It's a preemptive shut the fuck up song. All right, so that goes out to all the people defending this idiot and the Latipus, whatever his name is, who went to Harvard. Just shows you that, you know, Harvard graduates some people who are not fully there. All right, Florida. I got to get out of this place. I got to tell you. So let me tell you what's going on today. I figured I wanted to start off the year by looking at the challenges ahead, like what's on the table, what do we have to deal with? And so joining us in just a few minutes will be David Dayan from the American Prospect, who, coincidentally enough, has a piece in the right there at prospect.org titled 2022, the year in governing. Here's everything to look out for over the next 12 months. So we will. As soon as he joins us, I'll bring him in. But while we wait for David Dayan to show up, let me tell you a few other things that have happened today. One is the jury. You know, Friday we got the verdict on Ghislaine Maxwell, guilty, thank God. But have you noticed? This is a case of rape. Young girls were raped repeatedly by men in power. Obviously, we know about Jeffrey Epstein. We hear about Prince Andrew. We know Trump and Bill Clinton were on the plane. We know Alan Dershowitz was there. We've heard the stories. Who's prosecuted? A woman. How many men have been prosecuted so far? Not a one. I say this shouldn't be over yet. Go after Prince Andrew. Go after Alan Dershowitz. Go after, we don't have proof that Donald Trump or Bill Clinton stooped these women, but how about getting the guys who did? All right, so that happened. Today, we learned that New York Attorney General Tish James subpoenaed Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump a month ago. It was back on December 1st, part of the civil investigation into their father's business practices. This, you know what this is about? This is about the Trump organization's general, like regular practices, we learned from Michael Cohen, of inflating the value of their properties for some people and deflating it, undervaluating it for, well, the IRS. So when it came to paying taxes, they were underpaying. When it came to putting a value on their properties for whether they were going to sell them or use it for a collateral or for other purposes, they would bulk up the value. They go figure. They lied. They've lied. And of course, now Donnie Jr. and Ivanka have refused to comply. So now this is a problem because this is not a congressional subpoena. These are not congressional subpoenas. These are criminal subpoenas. So they're now considered respondents in an ongoing probe. They're planning to file motions to quash the subpoenas. Again, I'm not an attorney and I certainly don't play one on the radio, but I would think they're opening themselves up to prosecution for refusal to comply with a legal subpoena by the New York Attorney General. I don't think they can do that. Just saying, you know, just saying. Dershowitz pleaded the underwear defense. Underwear on no violation. I don't get that, Algy. I don't know. In other news, and I only know this because I saw a J.L. Coven bit on YouTube, so I'm not quite sure if it's true, but according to J.L. Coven on YouTube, I can't even say it. Don Jr. Proposed to Kimberly. Yes, Kimberly Guilfoyle. Remember her? Yeah. So, allegedly, he proposed and she said yes. Oh, my God. I don't even want to think about what that entails. All right. What else? There's other things. I have a letter here from Chucky Schmucky. Chuck Schumer is starting the year off with a bang. Now, the Senate is back. They were actually supposed to take a vote on something tonight, but it's a snow day in D.C. They're having some weather there. So I think nothing is happening tonight, but the Senate should be back tomorrow. And the House isn't back for another week or so. But Chuck Schumer put out a letter to colleagues, a dear colleague letter, basically saying that he's going to not only take some votes on Build Back Better, although I'm not sure what form it'll take, but also that he's going to bring up voting rights. So that'll be interesting. Because again, in order to get anything done on voting rights, he needs all 50 Democrats in the Senate to vote for it, plus Kamala Harris to be the tiebreaker. And right now, as far as I can tell, he doesn't have, you know, the dynamic duo of Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. But this is the reason we always invite an expert on the program. And I'm so excited to say our first guest of the new year is here. He's David Dayen. He's the executive editor of the American Prospect at prospect.org. It should be one of your first stops every morning when you do your reading. It is mine. Hey, David, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Nicole.
Thank you so much. And thank you for being here today. So at the start of the year, how are you feeling? You optimistic? You're ready for 2020? I got to share this with you because it's stuck in my head. I saw something written out the other day and somebody said, do you realize that the year is 2022? But when you pronounce it slowly, it's 2022. Like T-O-O?
All over again.
All over again. For the third time. I heard right. Someone else say that 2021 was just a variant of 2020.
2020.1. Yeah.
Was a variant.
2020.2.
Right. And now we're 2022. Oh, my God. We're never going to escape.
It's like those terrible names for sequels, like Die Harder.
Right. Too Fast, Too Furious. Yeah.
Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, this is 2020 with a vengeance, I guess.
Yeah.
So are you feeling at all optimistic that something good might happen this year?
I mean, you know, I'm a sunny guy, Nicole.
Yeah, you are out there in LA.
I don't think it does well for any political movement to just knee-jerk assume despair at all levels. I think if you're going to be successful, you have to assume that there's a path forward. It depends on what you're talking about, right? In terms of a path forward, I mean, I don't see much of a path for voting rights because it would involve killing the filibuster. And Manchin and Sinema have been very clear for months now that they are not interested in carving out any exceptions for the filibuster rule. So as long as they're committed to effectively minority rule in the U.S. Senate, I don't see a way forward there. Other things are different. Maybe there is a path.
Okay.
But that's just legislation, right?
Right.
And so we get very fixated on legislation. It's easy to track. There are votes. There's a number. You have to get 50 over 49 or whatever. We don't think about the other ways that progress is made in America. Some of it through congressional oversight, some of it through executive action, some of it through workers taking charge of their own future. So there are plenty of options for progress that can be made in America, in governing. And I think it's worth laying all those out rather than thinking that the only thing that could possibly happen that's good comes out of Capitol Hill.
Well, that's true. However, there are some things that need to come out of Capitol Hill. For instance, sure, you know, they keep kicking the can down the road. They do need to come up with a spending bill, a budget of some sort, don't they? Was the spending bill connected with Build Back Better, or are those two separate things?
No, those are two separate things.
But they're both called spending bills.
Yeah, Yes. Well, I mean, the spending bill is kind of routine spending. This is the budget that is done every year where we, affiliate revenues to various departments within the federal government. The Build Back Better Act is new spending. That's spending over and above what we normally do in an annual budget process. So as far as where we are with those two, the annual budget process, right now we have a continuing resolution until February 18th.
Right.
And at that point, you would need to fund the government out until the end of the fiscal year, which is the end of September. The Congress has not been able to get together on appropriations to figure out a way forward. If they do, it actually takes some pressure off of Build Back Better, which has a lot of kind of spending measures that would be well suited to just stick into the appropriations bill. Mm. And that would afford more money to go to other programs. So things like there's $1 billion for the antitrust agencies that's in Build Back Better that could easily be in appropriations. There's a lot of money for child nutrition. You could see that going in appropriations, farm conservation, new fees on offshore drilling. So we'll see what happens with the appropriations process, but I imagine that will happen before we see anything on Build Back Better, frankly.
Wow.
Build Back Better.
Now, where are we? Because before the break, Joe Manchin goes on Fox, News, the final show where Chris Wallace is there and says, I just can't. I can't go there. I'm not there. Right. Build Back Better is dead. And
right. He says that. And then it apparently was like in The Princess Bride, mostly dead, because the next day, Manchin and Biden talked. And apparently things are pretty much in the same place as they were before the break. This is the Biden agenda. I don't expect him to give up on this before, it's absolutely vital or certain that nothing is going to happen. They're going to try to find points of consensus, which exist. I think the big sticking point is the price tag of moving forward on the child tax credit, the advanced monthly tax credit. The reason is that Manchin wants everything paid out for 10 years,
right,
which would make it permanent. And if you extended the child tax credit for 10 years under its current formation, that would be $1.6 trillion.
Right. So it would eat up all the money that's allotted to it. Right.
Right. That would be the whole bill. So, and by the way, that's an artificial number, like allotted to it. That's allotted by Manchin. He's the only one saying it has to be $1.75 trillion, right? So something is going to have to change there, obviously. Just making the child tax credit refundable, which is permanent in the current bill, is cheaper, but actually very impactful. When I say refundable, that means that someone who doesn't have tax liability under current what the current law will be, if they don't have tax liability, they don't get the child tax credit.
Right. Because it's not like, and either way, they're not going to get a check in the mail each month, which is what helped so much.
Right. They're not going to check, but they're not going to get anything.
Right.
They're not even going to get the deduction. If it's refundable, in other words, like even if you have no tax liability, you can get it. That really helps the people who really need this, which are at the lowest end of the income ladder.
Right.
So that might be the compromise, that you just do refundability and move forward. There's a fantasy land notion that there are Republicans who are interested in the child tax credit. Romney has a program that actually is good, but I don't think he has any support for it other than himself. Susan Collins has talked about this in various occasions. Yeah, exactly. Roll your eyes. It's like, what do you really think you're going to get out of those negotiations, especially if Republicans think we're about to get power in Congress? And why would we come up with a bipartisan solution on this if we can just get it on our terms in 2 years?
You know, David, let me ask you this. If this were 10 years ago, and I'm not saying that life under George Bush was a bowl of cherries or anything, but because he was horrible. I mean, think where we were 10 years ago. We were talking 10 years ago. We were disgusted and freaked out as well. But this is a different ball game now. At least back then, some Republicans would work with some Democrats. If it were 10 years ago and that was the climate, do you think they would be able to get anything done on this child tax credit? Because right now, there is no working with the other side.
Yeah, I mean, the Trump tax cuts had an increase in the child tax credit. That's something that people don't realize, is that the child tax credit was $1,000 a year before the Trump tax cuts. The Trump tax cuts doubled them to $2,000. And then the current one-year thing that was in the American Rescue Plan made it $3,000. And if you're under six, $3,600.
Right.
So now that it's expired from the American Rescue Plan, it's back to $2,000. And after 2025, it would go back to $1,000, which is not even where the Republicans wanted it. So presumably there's space for a deal maybe down the road to get it at least back to the $2,000 level and maybe change some things from there. But I would think you'd want to lock in refundability. It's cheaper. It's more impactful. It goes to the people who really need it. You combine that with some making some other things permanent, like universal pre-K, which Manchin seems to like, the climate funding, which is really non-negotiable.
Right.
You could put something together, but it's hard for me to trust a process where Manchin has found a way to say no at every step. Right.
I mean,
it's just hard for me to invest myself in the process when I have seen what he's done to it over and over and over again. And so until I get some real indications that there's serious talks going on, I'm going to just sort of blow this off.
Right. But the whole thing, I can't get inside his head. Obviously, I don't understand how he thinks, but I can't leave Kyrsten Sinema out of this either. I don't know why she's all of a sudden gotten a pass, but these two senators, and look at voting rights. Okay.
Not
let's just talk
two of them.
I know there are others,
there are others. They like the fact that Manchin and Sinema take the heat and they can hide behind them.
Right. But you've got the two from New Hampshire and you've got the two from Delaware, as far as I can tell, although I think they'll do whatever Joe Biden tells them to because they owe their careers to him. But they're not alone. You got Mark Kelly in Arizona. You got a few others around there who are not exactly progressive.
Right.
But right now, in terms of voting rights, I think we can all agree that if the Democrats aren't able to fix the mess that's going on now with the Republicans basically going around state to state, in every state where there's a Republican governor, they are upending the election mechanism and putting in partisan actors who can overturn the results if they don't like them. If something's not done about that, we're fucked. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Well, I mean, the bills that are being discussed don't even really deal with that. I mean, that's the dirty secret, is the bills that are being discussed don't really deal with the changes in election administration and the fact that legislatures in mainly in Georgia right now, this is the issue. There are other states that are sort of flirting with this, but it's really only law in Georgia, as far as a swing state is concerned, that the legislature can essentially take control of the election administration mechanism. So that's not something that's really contemplated in these bills. Even if they overturn the filibuster and go ahead and pass the Freedom to Vote Act, or I think that's what it's called.
Right, the Freedom to Vote, and then the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement.
And even the John Lewis.
It's not in there.
That doesn't change this whole election administration thing, which is really the most dangerous part. Like, you've pinpointed it. That's the most dangerous thing right now. We're fortunate in that it's really only come to pass in Georgia. But it's a concern, because if Georgia's the test run in 22 and they see how well that works, then where are we in, you know, what flood of legislation will we see in 2023?
Right.
Or even this year, potentially.
That's right. That's right.
So there is no impediment to that. And I don't think Congress has figured out what their recourse is to do that, because elections right now are not federal. They're done at the state level. The states hold this authority to manage elections as they see fit. It's like a chink in the armor here that we can't figure out how are we going to. You could federalize elections, sure, right? But nobody's talking about
that. No, and the thing is,
the Voice Act doesn't do that.
I'm sitting here in Florida, and after 2000, when the election, the count was stopped and the victory handed to George W. Bush, how did the Democrats not do anything after that to make sure that can't happen again? That's what I don't get. Right. They do this over and over again, and now we're in this right. position.
It's just a series of like quarter measures. You know, we had the motor voter bill,
right?
Like after George Bush, right?
Right. I mean,
and then after this, after January 6th and the hostile takeover of this election machinery, we have the Freedom to Vote Act, which is right. you know, a pretty minor piece of legislation.
Wow. So even if they get this done, it's still not going to fix the most.
It's not going to fix the most pressing problem,
right.
And it'll fix some things. I think that, you know, I mean, think about what we were thinking about gerrymandering prior to the redistricting that went on, that is still going on in some
right.
states.
Still going here. On.
We thought that this was going to be the way that Republicans were going to lock in a majority for the next 10 years.
Right.
Well, comes to pass, they've started doing the redistricting everywhere, and it's pretty even. It's pretty much exactly as it was in terms of the partisan lean. Actually, there are more seats that lean Biden, seats in that Biden won under the 2020 count than there were prior to the redistricting.
Okay, that's encouraging.
Not by much, but by right. a little bit. So, I mean, you know, sometimes these things have a way of working out. What doesn't have a way of working out is that if you can just sort of take over an election count and decide to route it towards your favorite candidate, that we haven't figured out.
No.
Like, I don't think that there's a way that that works out.
No. And you would think that, you know, if by some chance that this plays out, it wouldn't get through the Supreme Court. But then look who's on the Supreme Court. Right. I can't trust them. I mean, I would normally, even if they were Republican appointees, to you know, this is their legacy. This is the nation. This is the future of democracy in this country. They'd want to uphold that. But with this crew, I can't count on them for that.
And they're certainly going to get a chance to weigh in. There are a number of litigation that is being practiced. Mark Elias is doing a lot of lawsuits around various various states and federal lawsuits around voting. There's redistricting lawsuits in North Carolina and Ohio
right.
that are going to be very important in terms of what's going to happen in those states. So, I mean, that falls under governing, right? Like what to look for in the year ahead is stuff like that.
Right.
And then you got to look at, okay, Congress is pretty tightly packed. There's some opportunities for some bipartisan things. There's an important bill on ocean shipping that could help with supply chain and inflation. They got 364 votes in the House,
wow.
so it could easily pass. There's some big tech legislation that has bipartisan support.
Right.
There are a couple other things like that. But I really think if you're going to see progress in 2022, you're going to have to look to the federal government and particularly what they do around the pandemic, which has been, you know, the one thing that I think people want to see out of their government is a good conclusion to the COVID crisis. As well as a number of other executive actions that we've talked about before that presidents have the authority to take, everything from canceling student debt to making marijuana legal effectively to lowering lowering prescription drug
prices as well. And on those fronts, you know, I've heard from a number of disaffected Democrats who are like, okay, they made a lot of promises and none of them are panning out. No cancellation of student debt, no lowering of drug prices, no, I mean, there's a ton of them. There's a whole list of them. And in fact, you have a piece up today at prospect.org, 2022, the year in governing. Here's everything to look out for over the next 12 months. And you have it split into three parts: legislation, congressional oversight, and executive action. And there's a ton of it. We couldn't even get through it in the 30 minutes. But I want to ask you about congressional oversight, because this has been an issue. We learn from a very young age about our system of checks and balances. And one of the prime responsibilities of Congress is oversight of the executive. But if the executive can just ignore subpoenas and act like a congressional hearings have no relevance to them, they don't have to pay attention to them, there is no congressional oversight of the executive right. branch.
Well, the other way that there isn't congressional oversight is when the party in power is the same as in Congress is the same as the president.
Sure.
And they shy away from doing oversight, but there really should be oversight of the CDC and their decision on quarantine.
Yep.
And shrinking that from 10 to 5 days. We should know about that. Like, why did they do that?
Right.
What was the science behind it? There should be oversight of the FDA and the way in which they have approved test kits in the United mm-hmm. States, COVID testing kits. At first, they only approved two, and still only now we have a handful compared to dozens in Europe and elsewhere.
And they're a fortune. They cost a fortune here and over in Europe. They're a buck a piece.
There's no competition. There were only two test kits that were allowed. One was by Abbott Labs and one mm-hmm. was by another lab. And the guy who's the bottleneck at the FDA worked at Abbott Labs and the other place. And those were the only two that were allowed to come in. So, yeah, we should see a lot of oversight around that. The problem is, you know, Democrats give their own party a pass and give their own president a pass. Now, there's certainly some oversight that needs to be done around, you know, broader things in the country. There was a great oversight investigation being done at the House Oversight Committee on drug prices. There's one on McKinsey and this consultant and their role in the opioid crisis. There should be oversight of all these airline flights that are being canceled,
yes.
thousands of them across the country. There's going to be an oversight hearing on the Astroworld tragedy where people were killed at that concert and the role of Live Nation, which is really a monopoly in ticketing and promotion.
Yes, it is.
There are a lot of various avenues for oversight. But I hope that it's well-rounded and we get, you know, Congress can't function unless they have the information.
Right. Well, and then there's the other big elephant in the room, if you will, which is January 6th. And again,
well, that is the committee you're going to see a lot of oversight.
We are.
Right? We're going to see televised public hearings.
Right.
Obviously, they've been doing a lot of subpoenaing of individuals to testify, and some have violated those subpoenas, like Steve Bannon and others. That's, you know, in terms of the popular imagination, the main way that we're going to see oversight conducted in Congress in 2022 is through the January 6th Commission.
Right.
Now, the question is, you know, what's going to come of it? I know that they want to change, do an overhaul and a reform of the Electoral Count Act. The Electoral Count Act is why January 6th is a thing. It's this law that says Congress has to certify the electoral results and they have to do it in a certain way. There's some thought of being able to fix that law, but, you know, are they going to be able to get the votes for that, particularly in the Senate? So I think that there are two things that are sort of separate here. One is, you know, how to use that, that particular commission for political means and certainly outlining how Donald Trump allowed a riot to happen at the Capitol is maybe an important thing for 2022.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's like the policy function. What is the policy function? How are we going to prevent this from happening? How are we going to change the structures so that there isn't even the opportunity to conduct an insurrection?
Right. But I call it opposite world because nothing makes sense. It's like if you look at it backwards in a mirror, things might be somehow make more sense. The fact that these Republicans are bending over backwards to go along with the stuff that you know deep down they have to disagree with, they can't, right? That they're doing this, they're putting the Constitution at risk to keep their jobs. I mean, it mm-hmm. just doesn't make any sense. Do you think, I know I've heard from a number of reporters on Capitol Hill who talk to these people every day, and they know that they don't all like Donald Trump, but they feel like they have to go along with this nonsense in order to stay employed.
That's why the commission is important. I mean, you know, even if there's no specific legislative impact, getting this on the public record in front of people, in front of an audience of millions to show what you were just saying is, I think, critical work. And Democrats are going to try to use that opportunity to make that claim.
Well, I hope they can do more than make the claim. I mean, again, I it's the gaslighting of this country that is so disturbing. When you read the polls, and some 60 some odd percent of Republicans don't believe Joe Biden won the election. They believe right. that this is an illegitimate administration. And they think that the ones that were at the Capitol were doing the right thing because the election was stolen from them, because you have the guy who was the president lying about it. This is the, like the script of a really bad movie that 20 years ago couldn't have gotten made because it was too implausible.
And the hope is that you're talking about 60% of Republicans, but you're talking about in the overall population, a pretty small number. You're talking about 30% overall, maybe, and trying to isolate them and saying that this is the extreme ideology of the right that tries to delegitimize any electoral loss. And where the problem is that a Democrat wins an election, not integrity of the election
right.
or fairness or anything like that. The hope is that that will, you know, rouse independents and other Democrats to the Democratic side.
Well, you would think, but part of the problem is the reasonable Republicans have no way to win the primaries because it's the crazies who come out and vote. Unless and until we can get everyone to vote, make voting mandatory, you're going to wind up with the craziest Republican as the nominee. Then have to hope that the sane people will come out and vote in the general in order to prevent the insanity takeover?
Well, it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning, is that voting rights are obviously, you know, it's the issue that kicks off where all the other issues are going to land.
Right.
And so you would think that there would be that sense of urgency among the Democratic caucus, particularly in the Senate, to say that, yeah, we need to do something about this. But, you know, I don't have high hopes that we're going to see some legislation passed.
Okay, two more quick questions, because we've had a changeover at the FDIC. The chair, who was, a Trump appointee, resigned. Is this going to open for Joe Biden to get some movement there because he can appoint someone else to lead that commission? And the same thing at the post office. Are we ever going to be rid of DeJoy?
It's good questions. So the FDIC, really interesting thing happened where you had a Trump appointee, Jelena McWilliams, who was the chair, but it's a 5-member board and 3 of the members were Democrats. In other words, Democrats had the majority on the FDIC board, but they didn't have the chairmanship. Huh. And the chair was trying to subvert the will of the majority by saying, you're not allowed to vote for stuff until I say so.
Oh my.
So even if you want something and you have the votes to get it, I'm not going to let you have it. And clearly, this came to a head in mid-December, and clearly she figured out, like, I don't have a legal leg to stand on, so I'm just going to move aside.
Good.
And so now this opens up a real opportunity around bank regulations. You might see an overhaul of the Community Reinvestment Act to force banks to invest in low and moderate income communities. You'll likely see increases in bank capital requirements, including climate in the construction of bank risk, which is really, really important. So all of these things where you could have seen McWilliams at FDIC kind of block progress, now that progress can go through. So that's really good. As far as the post office, the reason that DeJoy was still in place over this first year is that Ron Blum, who is the chairman of the Board of Governors, was generally in support.
And he was a Democrat.
Yeah. He's a Democrat.
Amazing.
So his term expired and he was not picked up for another term. And so once Biden's nominee for that position goes in, there could be a changeover at the top in the Postal Service. So you know, we'll have to see once those nominees get confirmed.
We've got a long year ahead of us, and then a long 2 years after that. That's it. I think that's our time frame if we're going to save the form of democracy we have in this country, because it could very easily just all go away. Donald Trump today, wholeheartedly endorsed Orban?
Viktor Orban, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and that kind of urgency needs to go into these governing decisions. Whether you're talking about implementing the infrastructure bill, and if we get one, the Build Back Better Act, to make sure people see the changes in their lives.
Definitely.
And understand who brought them those changes. Whether you're talking about the powerful litigation options that you know folks are doing in the states to stop the attack on voting rights. All of these things have to have, whether you're talking about executive actions that Biden can take right now, today,
he can
sign a piece of paper. All of these things, you need an appropriate sense of urgency that is, you know, put forward by what you just said, which is that we have a couple years to save democracy.
Something like the fierce urgency of now?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you need to always govern that way, but certainly
especially now. Especially now. David Dayan, thank you so much. I couldn't think of a guest I would rather have to kick off the year. Appreciate it. Find him at the American Prospect, prospect.org, and on Twitter at D Dayan. Thank you so much, David. I will be calling on you again, and I so appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. And with that, that's David Dayan for you. Hold on. Let me get rid of these chyrons on the page. And so I could just say, we made it through the first show of the new year. Ay, ay, ay. Let me tell you, we've got some good stuff coming up. Let me tell you who I've got coming. Tomorrow, Dave Johnson's going to join us, old friend of the show. He's always good to just shoot the shit with. He's just back from about a month in the UK. And as part of a discussion in a mailing list that we're both on about leaving this country, many people, those with money, are leaving. Yeah, it's not very encouraging for you and I because we're stuck here, but yeah, that's happening. On Wednesday, I think I told you this last week, you know, we lost Betty White on New Year's Eve. And what a loss. I mean, look, if you got to go, that's the way to go. 99 years old, in your sleep, you know, 2 weeks shy of your 100th birthday. She lived a life. And, you know, no complaints. It's just, it's sad that she's gone because she was just somebody that we could all agree on, right? Well, a guy that I know, who I knew from my days in LA, he worked at the Los Angeles Daily News and at Variety, and he's a writer. And I know that he's been working on a book that I think is set for release right around her 100th birthday, a book on Betty White. And so it's just brand new. I don't think it's out yet. It'll be out in a week or two. Ray Richmond, he's going to join us on Wednesday because we can. So, and then Thursday is January 6th. Dive right into the fire. All right. So I'll see you tomorrow. That's how it goes. We'll be back tomorrow. Dave Johnson will be here. Until then, I will, as usual, leave you with the news. And thank you for listening and say good luck to us. We've got our work cut out for us this year. I wasn't kidding, and you saw David Dayan didn't flinch when I said we have this year leading up to November's election, and then we have two more years, but really anything we're going to get done, we better get done in the next 11 months, because once we lose control of either chamber of Congress, nothing else is going to come out of this administration. So we got our work cut out for us. So, you know, drink up, stay healthy, stay away from the COVID because we got work to do. All right? Okay. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll leave you with the news. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
And they're off.
Well, the Senate is back in session on Monday. The House returns next week, though events are scheduled throughout the day this Thursday as the nation observes the one-year anniversary of the Capitol Hill insurrection. Members of the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack said Sunday that they had received testimony and documents providing an increasingly clear picture of what then-President Donald Trump said and did in the White House during the insurrection by a mob of his supporters. Representative Liz Cheney, the Republican vice chair of the panel, told ABC News,
"We know as he was sitting there in the dining room next to the Oval Office, members of his staff were pleading with him to go on television to tell people to stop. We know Leader McCarthy was pleading with him to do that. We know members of his family. We know his daughter. We have firsthand testimony that his daughter Ivanka went in at least twice to ask him to please stop this violence. Any man who would not do so, any man who would provoke a violent assault on the Capitol to stop the counting of electoral votes, any man who would watch television as police officers were being beaten, as his supporters were invading the Capitol of the United States, is clearly unfit for future office. Clearly can never be anywhere near the Oval Office ever again."
Committee Chair Benny Thompson told CNN that it's, quote, "highly unusual for anyone in charge of anything to watch what's going on and do nothing." Meanwhile, former New York City Police Commissioner and Trump ally Bernard Kerik reportedly gave up a trove of documents to investigators working with the committee. Politico reporting that Kerik's attorney gave up the documents containing several strategies that Trump and his minions considered using for the attempt to challenge the 2020 election. One lengthy set of documents turned over is called Strategic Communications Plan, Giuliani Presidential Legal Defense Team. Kerik is an ally of Giuliani's, and the documents reportedly outlined a proposal to lean on Republican lawmakers from six swing states and get them to vote against certifying Trump's loss. The report says, quote, "The document says its primary channels to disseminate messaging on these efforts included presidential tweets, as well as talk radio, conservative bloggers, social media influencers, Trump campaign volunteers, and other media allies." It also says that members of the House Freedom Caucus, many of whom backed Trump's attempts to overturn the election, were identified as, quote, key team members who would be involved in the strategy's execution. And it gets better. Kerik also reportedly provided documents outlining his email correspondence with associates about paying for rooms at the Willard Hotel. That's where Trump's allies set up their war room against the 2020 election. And those strategy sessions have been a major focus for investigators looking into what led to the events of January 6th. Kerik's lawyer also gave the committee a, quote, privilege log of documents that Kerik didn't turn over. One of them reportedly entitled Draft Letter from POTUS to Seize Evidence in the Interests of National Security for the 2020 Elections. The report says that Trump ultimately opted against that strategy, but his consideration of the option is one of the key questions the panel is probing as part of its broader investigation into attempts to overturn the election. Stay tuned. We should be hearing in the coming days about the scheduling of some public hearings to let us in on what they've learned so far. From the It's About Time files, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is reportedly going to put voting rights legislation on the floor for debate and votes, and will also bring up some version of the Build Back Better Act. Schumer and the Senate Democrats reportedly will use the one-year anniversary of the January 6th attacks as a reason for passing voting rights legislation, noting that the insurrection was spurred by the former guy's false claims about the elections. On Build Back Better, most of the action's taking place behind the scenes as the White House and Senate Democratic leadership tries to figure out how to win over Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to move on these priorities. But there are other issues coming to the front, like government funding. The current continuing resolution that keeps government agencies open and operating runs out in 47 days, and there's been no progress on a funding package so far. And of course, the planet has now entered our third year of this pandemic. Omicron has rapidly become the dominant variant of the coronavirus. Schools are scrambling to figure out how to proceed as they get ready for students returning after the holiday break. Many school districts are trying to acquire enough tests so they'll be able to impose test-to-stay strategies that allow them to keep open rather than return to remote classes. Some school districts, including Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, are extending winter break by 2 days to allow time to test staff and students. Chicago is urging parents to give their children rapid tests before sending them back. And some universities are starting the year with remote classes. And this just in, breaking news Monday morning, the FDA has authorized Pfizer booster shots for people aged 12 to 15 years, another expansion in the population eligible for the third vaccination. The FDA said they'll also make boosters available for children ages 5 to 11 whose immune systems are compromised. Meanwhile, COVID-19 case numbers are exploding due to this contagious Omicron variant. In Florida, cases have risen 948% over the past 2 weeks. The U.S. is also facing a COVID-19 test shortage. Deja vu, anyone? The Biden administration promised to send out 500 million free tests to American households, but it is unclear when those tests could arrive. But they may arrive sooner than you do at home. Chances are, if you traveled over the holidays, you may not have made it home yet, and you are far from alone. Airlines canceled more than 2,100 flights into, out of, or within the United States on Sunday alone, bringing the total number of canceled flights since Christmas Eve to more than 15,000. USA Today reporting that staffing shortages have plagued airlines as Omicron has infected some employees and has left others afraid to go back to work. On New Year's Day alone, the Washington Post reports almost 4,400 flights were canceled worldwide. Twitter announced on Sunday that it had permanently suspended Marjorie Taylor Greene's personal Twitter account for violations of its policies against spreading misinformation about COVID-19. The ban came after Greene made one last false tweet about the pandemic on Saturday, saying there had been, quote, extremely high amounts of COVID vaccine deaths, huh? Twitter called it her fifth strike, meaning that under its rules, her account now cannot be restored. And finally, with the new year comes some new food labeling. You now may start seeing labels on genetically modified foods. The law went into effect Saturday, standardizing requirements across the U.S. The labels will say bioengineered. That means the plant or animal had a new gene inserted to make it more nutritional or resistant to pests or diseases. There are a few foods that will have this label, including some apples, corn, and salmon. As they say, the more you know. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is still fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.